Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology, and I've read all of Jane Austen. And I am joined by my sibling,
Teresa. I have a background in social work, and I have read 26 chapters of Northanger and all of Pride and Prejudice.
Woohoo! And today we are talking about chapter 24, 25, 26 of Northanger Abbey. These are some of my favorite chapters, so I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
I liked them. I liked them a lot. I think going from the last set of chapters where Catherine is just like her most ridiculous person ever, there's still a little bit of her ridiculousness going on. And then she's like, oh shit, I'm being ridiculous. So at least like Catherine can reality test a little, which I appreciate.
She's not like delusional. Her imagination got the best of her.
Exactly. It's the same as like anyone who has ever heard a bump in their house and thought like there's someone in my house versus sometimes old houses are creaky.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about last night while I was lying in bed. My brain was like, there's someone in the room with you. I was like, there's no one in the room with you, Kate. You're okay. Go back to bed. And like pulled the sheets over top of my head. And I'm like, you're fine. Go to sleep. And yet my anxiety would not let it go. There was like a creeping hand. And anytime there was a little bump, I was like, there's someone watching me sleep. So I eventually had to turn on the light to check the room to make sure that my anxiety could calm down to be like, there's no one here. Okay. There's no one here.
Exactly. We've all been there.
Yeah, I feel like Catherine has less of that check of that's not true.
Yeah, Catherine's not great about that. Or rather, she can get there. It just takes her a little bit longer to get there, right? Like she's willing to indulge the, whether it's anxiety or imagination or fantasy, a little bit deeper than maybe the average person might.
And like, I also go back to she's 17, 18. She is alone in a creepy place for the first time. So I cut her a little bit more slack, remembering how much more my anxiety was active back then and how I probably could have told a story. But I was thinking about this. I will talk about this more as we go along. And I think we talked about this maybe last time or the time before, where it's just something that I talked about in my head, that your feelings are valid, but you don't always know the true story behind those feelings. So Catherine's getting a vibe that there's something off with the general and that there's like this uneasiness that she feels when she's around him. And that feeling is valid based off like what we also see. There's something about him that's not making sense.
Yeah,
her brain has filled it in with the story of my boyfriend's dad is a murderer.
Right.
So, like, yeah, her feeling's still valid, but the story she's used to fill it in doesn't make sense.
The leaps she's taken to get there are ginormous leaps.
Right. So it's just one of those things where it's interesting to see in Catherine like a lot of things where that make a lot of sense to me. And it's like, Catherine, that's not true. How did you get there? It was just like the biggest leap possible. And we know that she got there because Catherine is like, I want a mystery.
Right. She's like, I want murder.
She's like the Scooby-Doo kids who are like, oh my God, there's ghosts. And then it's like, and we revealed that it was just a normal person all along.
There is something about it that like is very endearing. It also shows her age a little bit. I get why people might say she's naive in these chapters a little bit, because she indulges so far into these types of things.
Well, and I mean, it is also Jane Austen satirizing the gothic genre of kind of like, imagine a heroine who's read these things, who thinks that's going to happen to her, but in reality, that doesn't happen.
A big part of it too is there is a lot of references to what Catherine has read. And initially it's like, she's read too much to know that this can't be not real. And then it becomes, she's read too much and realizes, oh, I've read too much and all of this is not real.
Well, it's like she is very like calm, kind, not innocent, but wholesome individual. And she just wants some more adventure in her life.
Like we've talked about that. She lives a very small life. You know, she's lived with her family her entire life, most of which has been her just like going outside and running after other children. And she hasn't had a lot in her life. So this is a way to make her life a little bit more exciting, more like the books she has read. I mean, I can't think of any teenager who, one, doesn't decentralize themselves from their story and also like has a little bit of that desire to be bigger or something more than maybe their life is currently, or to appear that way. I think that that's not abnormal for her developmental age.
Yeah, she's wanting to figure out what it means to be an adult.
Mm-hmm. And these are the things, like the representations of adulthood that she's had are her parents. I guess the Allens are like kind of around, but a large portion of it has been the books she's read and envisioning these adult characters and thinking like, this is what happens frequently because that's the media she's consuming.
Yeah, Catherine is bored.
And creates some interesting ideas because she's bored.
Yeah. And that's basically where we start in chapter 24, is Catherine's just mediating on her thoughts about Mrs. Tilney and figuring out how she can go and see her room. And what were your thoughts?
I mean, it's interesting. She attempts this with Miss Tilney of like, yeah, take me to see your mom's room now. And they get to the door and get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all of the like added layer of weirdness then of getting caught by the general, the weirdness that Catherine feels around that, Miss Tilney being like, oh, he just wanted me to answer a note, which like Catherine knows is a lie.
Catherine thinks she knows is a lie.
Catherine is assuming is a lie. And so there's like all of that weirdness that then gets wrapped up in the story even more.
Well, and I think part of Catherine knows that sneaking in to see the dead mom's bedroom of her boyfriend and new best friend is weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a part of her that knows that she's being sneaky. And so when the general comes out and he's like, Eleanor, she thinks that they're in shit. She thinks that they're in trouble. So she goes to her room and hides.
She's afraid she's going to get yelled at.
Well, Miss Tilney does try to be like, it's okay. We're fine. But I also think it's kind of funny that Eleanor doesn't find her curiosity a little weird.
Right. Although maybe she does, and we're just not privy enough to Eleanor's thoughts. And Eleanor's like, look, I'm also bored. Like, if this will entertain my new friend, okay, I'll go along with it.
Something to do. Yeah, it's funny. So they fail to get in. So what does Catherine think?
I'll go by myself.
Because that's, you know,
normal.
Better.
Yeah, it's not like me and Eleanor should make a better plan to do this together again. It's like, nope, now I must go by myself.
Yeah. Her brain just like gets into this mode of it's a secret. And this will mean that I can go and Eleanor doesn't get in trouble. Even though Eleanor's reassured her, like, no one's in trouble. That's literally just how my father calls me when he wants something.
Yeah. Like, it's totally normal. It's fine.
But no. And then she goes in there and she's just like, oh, it's a room.
Yeah. She was like expecting to find the dead body still there, like Bates Motel style.
Well, it's like when I turn on my lights and there's no monster there. It's just, for me, that was a sense of relief. But because Catherine's chasing, I guess, exhilaration would almost be like the feeling that I would say is behind this. There's nervousness and anxiety mixed in here, but she's seeking like an anticipatory and exciting feeling. So she's kind of let down when the lights go on and she's like, oh, this is a normal room. There's nothing special here. And like, unless maybe this was your mom's room and it's nice to come and visit sometimes.
Right. And like had sentimental meaning. Like otherwise it's just a room. I really love this line, like just the way it is written really stands out to me. It's the Catherine had expected to have her feelings worked, and worked they were. Astonishment and doubt first seized them, and a short succeeding ray of common sense added some bitter emotion of shame.
Yeah.
Which is like, Catherine expected that she was going to be like shocked and surprised, and she was going to feel a lot of big things. And what she realizes, the feeling that's big is actually, oh, I'm a little ashamed that I've made this into something bigger than it is, and potentially gotten my friend in trouble for it. This wasn't worth all of that.
It speaks to me about how no emotion is a bad emotion. Shame sometimes gets a bad rap because it does get mixed in with a lot of strong emotions, specifically for individuals with trauma. But shame is there to help us mitigate our behavior, which, like, okay, shame, bad and traumatic, abusive, oppressive circumstances. We need to unpack shame. And that's overactive shame. Right. But in this circumstance, it's kind of like, yeah, Catherine, you maybe should be a little bit ashamed of the fact that you let things go this far, that you were you're now sneaking around and snooping in someone's house. You're snooping on your boyfriend's dead mom's room. You crossed the line. Yeah, she needs just like that little dose of shame to give those feelings just that extra bit of like, oh, I done fucked up.
In excellent fashion for this section of the book, however, there is a thunderstorm going on outside my window right now. So if people hear rumbling, there's legitimately a thunderstorm happening as we're talking about this gothic parody.
I mean, imagine if Catherine had done this in the middle of a thunderstorm. Her,
oh my God,
imagination would have just like excelled.
It would have been amazing.
I wonder if Catherine would have had that same reaction if the environment had kind of lended itself to a little bit more fantastical thinking. If she would have gone into this very plain room and been like, oh, I'm astonished, there is something weird on the side table that makes me think that she held this when she died. Like, if her brain
right
carried her a little bit further. I think that's the point, is that she's looking at this room and plain day, recognizing how silly her thoughts have been. Yeah.
I did note in here, though, so there are two other doors in the chamber that after Catherine's really disappointed, she's like, it's probably just dressing closets. I'm not going to investigate them. And part of me wonders if that's like an opening, and then Catherine's going to have these weird feelings again and be like, what if the body was hidden in the closet? And like, continue this kind of fantastical thinking. So I'm leaving opening for that. And maybe that will pin that for like, it's not quite a future prediction, because I think it could just be like an off comment of like, yeah, and then Catherine was really uninterested.
Right.
But there's also part of me that's like, could this be an opening? So I'm like pinning that as a like kind of prediction.
So your brain still is a little bit like, Catherine, maybe Catherine's not wrong.
No, I think Catherine's wrong. I just think that Catherine will continue to want to indulge this thought.
Okay. Do you think that much of that is going to rekindle itself after her shame is kind of amplified? Because she leaves and gets caught.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it could be, because she does quickly feel better after everything ends up being fine around like this situation and
right.
With her and Mr. Tilney. So I think it's possible.
What did you think of her getting caught?
I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm glad it's by Mr. Tilney and not the general, because I think that would be worse. I also think like she thinks it's this big like thing. And like, yes, she is snooping around someone else's house, and that's a little weird. But I don't think it's as big as she thinks it is.
Because it's Mr. Tilney.
Exactly. If she got caught by like a maid, it would be awkward, but probably wouldn't make its way up the chain, so she'd probably be fine. Eleanor, I think, would probably also be like, you're such a weirdo. What are you doing? Versus, really, if she got caught by the general, that's when it would be weird.
I don't know. I just love this entire interaction where she like bumps into him on the stairs. She's like, Mr. Tilney, good God, how came you here? How can you come up the staircase? And He's just like, because this is the quickest way to my room. What are you doing here?
Yeah, he's like, you're not usually over here. This is kind of strange. And also, why are you accosting me about going to my room?
Because she got scared.
Yeah, she got startled.
Uh-huh. I think Henry knows that he startled Catherine. He almost apologizes for, like, running into her. And he's like, this is a really weird route to be taking to the breakfast parlor. And Catherine's like, I went to see your mom's room.
He's also like, he's kind of cute being like, oh, you went to see my mother's room. Did you see anything interesting?
And she tries to kind of not smoothly change the conversation. I thought you didn't mean to be back until tomorrow. And he's like, no, no. And then he's like trying to figure out what's going on. You look pale. Did I scare you that much? What's going on?
This is weird, Catherine.
And Catherine just answers his question and then tries to change the subject again.
Because she's embarrassed. I mean, it would be pretty embarrassing getting caught. I feel it. I get it.
I think he's trying to figure out how weird she is. Are you, like, going into all of the rooms that you weren't invited to see? Like, how much snooping are you doing in my house?
Should I be worried that you're trying to steal things?
She's almost like, I should go dress. And he's like, it's fine. Keep walking with me. And then he kind of tries to break some tension. He asks about whether or not she's gotten letters. And yeah, we find out that Isabella is Isabella.
Yep. Promised to write and didn't. Surprise, surprise there.
And I like that Tilney continues to, I don't know if mock's the right word, Isabella. Maybe it is.
I think he sees her quite transparently.
It's the Isabella promised so faithfully to write directly. Promise so faithfully? A faithful promise? That puzzles me. And yes, he's like teasing apart Catherine's choice of language, which he does, because he's a little bit of a pedant about those sorts of things. But I think he's also calling out Isabella.
Yeah.
Of like,
yeah, for being her true self,
for putting ideas in Catherine's head almost,
right?
Which I think is interesting that he's calling out Isabella and then he goes back to ask more about his mom and his mom's room. And did Eleanor send you to the room? And it's like this interesting transition where it's almost like Austin is pointing us to be like, Henry knows where Catherine's weird ideas have come from.
Mm-hmm. He gets her.
Even when he's annoyed with her.
Right. He gets it. Yeah. It is also sweet that he's kind of like, you know, I sometimes wonder if Eleanor would want to like move into that room. It's like very, it's one of the nicest places in the house, but it's also hard because it's where our mother died.
Yeah. I think he's also trying to figure out Catherine's brain in this moment. So he's doing a little bit of like, talking out loud, like talking his thoughts out loud. Because he's like trying to lead her down a path to be like, okay, I've like dropped an excuse over here for you. Did this actually happen? And even though this is a moment that highlights all of Catherine's silliness, for lack of a better word, I truly appreciate that he's like left her all of these places where she could lie. And be like, oh, yeah, yeah, Eleanor talks about her a ton. And Catherine just tells the truth.
Right. Which I think is a good place to start a relationship from. Like, she knows better than to lie to him. She's not trying to make herself look better by lying to him.
Yeah, she's not embarrassed to the point where a lie is necessary. Yeah, he's just like, did Eleanor talk about her a great deal? And she's like, yes, a great deal. That is, no, not much. What she did say was interesting. Her dying so suddenly and none of you being at home and your father, I thought perhaps not very fond of her.
Is a huge thing to admit to your boyfriend. Like, I thought your dad hated your mom and maybe murdered her.
I mean, she hasn't outright said that, but Tilney very quickly fills in the blanks.
Yeah. He's like, oh, it could have been negligence or something more.
And her eyebrows just go up and he's like, Catherine. And so He just basically goes through and explains the facts to her.
Yeah, and he's like, it's actually not as sensational as you think. She was getting a lot of care, and she'd been sick for a while, and then she had a seizure.
Yeah, it was like 4 days, 5 days of her being sick, and my brother and I were here the whole time. There were multiple doctors.
It's just Eleanor wasn't home.
She was away. Oh, I was just like, Catherine, you could have just let this go, babe. Why do you keep going? But your father, was he afflicted? Was your dad sad when your mom died? What a weird question to ask your boyfriend.
Right?
Of like, what, we're maybe at a couple months now.
It's like a pretty intense question to ask.
It hasn't been that long.
I do appreciate Tilney's wording in this, though, of he loved her, I am persuaded, as well as it was possible for him to. And I think that that speaks to, yeah, my dad was also still a jerk then.
There's actually a lot of coded language in here that makes me very much just think that he was abusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his temper injured her.
After he talks about that his father, he could be persuaded that his father could love her as much as possible for his dad. He's basically like, we're all a little bit different. We're not all that tender. And I will not pretend to say that while she lived, she might not often have had much to bear. But though his temper injured her, his judgment never did. His value of her was sincere. And if not permanently, he was truly afflicted by her death. And I think it speaks to the way that he recognizes his dad sees people as through a very judgmental lens. And his mother was someone that he valued, which again, it's like almost like this utility that he's talking about. Like my dad never thought poorly of her, which is not the same thing as loving someone. And my dad has a horrible temper. And I really appreciate the space that we're given with that one word of injured her.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, okay, like how far did this temper actually go? So like when he was angry, was he throwing things at her? Was he hitting her? What kind of injury are we talking about here? And that he recognizes that maybe his dad doesn't love, but he did value what his wife gave to him, and he missed that when it was gone. And I think that that speaks very much to what we've already discussed about General Tilney, and that that sort of narcissistic lens of seeing others through the utility of what they offer you yourself, and that the general, that's how he views his family. What do you give me? What do you represent to me? How am I going to further my reputation through you?
Which fits in with his discussion of like, it's so important for my sons to work, because that is an outward projection of look how good of a father I am.
Right. That his wife gave him pieces of that also makes me cringe in terms of the amount of eggshell walking that you had to do, and that his father only valued her if he got something in return. It's not, he doesn't say all of those things, but there's enough there to fill in the blanks. And I don't think I'm fantastically filling in the blanks like Catherine. I think Tilney is very aware of the reality of what his father is.
Yeah.
Which is like, he's not great. He's an asshole. He didn't kill my mom, Catherine.
Yeah. Well, and he does talk about this is England and we're also still Christian. And so like he does place a lot of values in this last little bit where he like, I could see how Catherine would take it as being chastised of being like, how did you get there? Like, come on, like all of the books you read are not happening in this type of setting. Like, we're a nice country little family living out here. And Catherine is humiliated.
There's a really good The Thing About Austin episode on pamphlets. And they delve into a lot more of the kind of the bottom half of this speech that he has and give it a little bit more context. where he's talking about being surrounded by a neighborhood of voluntary spies, because this was also a time when there was conflict. Austin's kind of writing in a little bit more of the peaceful moments, but like the reason that the military plays heavily into a lot of Austin and like being able to elevate yourself through all of that is because there has been conflict and that there has been war, and this is how they can make you can like rise and make money is because of all of those things. Just because we're in a quiet period now doesn't mean that the culture around that isn't ongoing, and that your neighbors have been co-opted to spy on you because there's still this fear of spies. There's still this fear of traitorousness. And he's kind of like, you really think that if my dad, if there was any smell of murderousness, that his neighbors wouldn't be reporting on him?
Right. Like if there was any suspicion from anyone right. who knew this family, something would have happened. And it's been a while since she died. It's not like she died like 5 days ago. Like
right.
it's been years.
It's an interesting, like adding a little bit of extra context to Catherine's like silliness of why did Catherine, the 17-year-old, feel like she was going to break the case?
Right. Like, come on, Catherine.
Yeah. And then she just like runs away to her room. And I kind of wonder if she starts a little bit of like the crying, and then he watches her run away and he's like, I didn't mean to make you feel that bad.
Just wanted to point out you were being silly. I didn't want you to feel shame.
Well, like a dose of shame, but not like to the point where you think I am belittling your character. And the next little bit, the next chapter is actually probably my favorite chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much in there around his secure attachment and just how he handles conflict. He doesn't need to hold on to it, and he doesn't need to make a big deal about it. Catherine is expecting to get kicked out.
Yeah, I mean, the very first sentence of the next chapter is, the visions of romance were over.
Yeah. How can he like me after all of that? He must hate me.
I love this. He paid her rather more attention than usual. Catherine had never wanted comfort more, and he looked as if he was aware of it. Like such, oh, what a cute like guy, what a good partner. This is what we should all strive for.
It is one of my favorite moments where there's just this awareness in him and this desire to, his anger is not punishing. And I don't even know if he was angry at her before, just very surprised.
Yeah, being like, what? How?
How did you end up here?
Yeah.
And I do very much wonder what his thoughts were when he went away himself to prepare for dinner. Did he go to his room and he was like, what just happened?
Yeah, I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's like thinking to himself, like, why'd she run off crying? I'm so confused by all of this.
He is so sweet here in that he's not trying to reassure her that what she was thinking was wrong or was right. So he's not trying to reassure her that, like,
yes, my dad did murder my mom.
Or even, like, I understand how you got there.
Right.
He is just trying to reassure Catherine, I still like you.
Well, and I appreciate this chapter to me also was a lot of good reality testing for Catherine of being like, right, the books that I've read, although they're very good, probably not great basis of reality for the life I live. And just being able to kind of talk herself through how she got there and then recognizing like, okay, I maybe put too much into that. Because I think this is where, for me, it strongly differs from like fantastical imagination versus delusions, right? If she was delusional, testing that reality would be a lot harder. And being able to talk herself through that would be a lot harder. Having a fantastical imagination, she's able to then say like, oh, right, that's where that idea came from. Probably not realistic.
Well, and it's a good point that when Catherine, even when we watch her go through and talk about her, like when she starts getting into her fantastical what the fuck thinking, she is doing tiny little bits. There's a part of her that's like doing reality testing in some of those thoughts of like, yeah, but that couldn't happen here. And it just kind of like snowballs down the hill until it gets to the end and runs into a Henry Tilney rock. I like this here where it's, she did not learn either to forget or to defend the past, but she learned to hope it would never transpire farther and that it might not cost her Henry's entire regard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just such a good part of accountability is you're supposed to learn from your mistakes, but we don't need to live there. You don't need to set up camp and be like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person and I'm going to sit here in my horribleness and never, I'm going to be ashamed for forever. And like making that this big thing. And I think she's able to recognize that it doesn't need to be a big thing because Henry doesn't make it a big thing.
Right. We can like have that be what it was and move on from it. It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's not going to deeply impact our relationship that like there was a misunderstanding.
Yeah. This entire chapter, including the later bit with the letter, this is Catherine's wake-up call.
Yes. Well, and I also appreciate that she's able to like recognize they're probably going to make fun of me for this for a while. And like, I'm going to have to endure that. It's going to suck, but I get it.
Also that she's able to recognize that her friends, Henry and Eleanor, might tease her about this. But that it can become one of those things that we just kind of teasingly talk about. Remember that time that you thought our dad was a murderer?
Yeah.
And that Catherine recognizes that that's not going to be done as like a punishment to her or even to like check her shame or any of that. It is an imperfection that she has that they get to poke fun at. And that is, she deserves to be poked at.
Right. She gets it. And there will also be things that they will do that we will then poke fun at each other about.
Yeah.
And she even says that she's able to now think about, like, even though she adores Henry and Eleanor, they might have some imperfections also. And that's okay.
I love that. She's also removing the pedestal from these two and just recognizing I like them because they are actually genuinely amazing people. I don't need to put them on a pedestal. And we've seen her do this with her friendships where she kind of has to put someone on a pedestal, especially like with Isabella, put them on the pedestal so that I can ignore their flaws and I don't have to think too deeply about their flaws. And it's great because it's like Catherine shifts from having to have this black and white thinking of like, they're amazing or they're evil to people be people.
Yep. Which is like, I think a better place for her to be coming from, particularly with what comes up with Isabella.
Yes. I do think it's kind of funny that she's like, they were books, Catherine. And then she's like, and we're in England. This would never happen in England. So there's always like a little part of her that's kind of like, well, off in the Alps, these horrible things must be true. And it's like, Catherine, it's fiction.
But I think what I like about that, though, is like there is a little bit of that playfulness that Catherine wants to keep of like, okay, maybe that won't happen here. But like, I'd like to imagine and dream that like somewhere in this world that could be happening.
Which I love Catherine for that, where she's like, somewhere someone is being murdered. Like, Catherine, why is this the thing that you really want to exist in the world?
Right? She's so excited about it.
And I mean, I think that also there's a little bit of cultural supremacy in this yes. perspective of like, oh, we are English, we are Christian. I think it's kind of funny because they're all relatively the same.
Yeah.
It there is, I don't know, just like that interesting othering of other cultures that allows Catherine to keep this fantastical thinking. There's so many layers there in terms of you could keep diving and diving.
But we move into some bad news from Catherine's brother.
Yes, I like that she comes down and Henry's just like, you have a letter. And he's excited to give it because she keeps asking about, she checks every day to be like, do I have a letter? And one came and he's excited to give it to her. That moment is just so cute. We knew that the repair had already been done because he'd just filled that space by giving her extra attention and soothing her. And then I just love that little moment that puts it back into, and now we're playful again.
And I love that she's like, it's only from James. She's like really wanting a letter from Isabella. And she's, how long has she been at Northanger at this point, do you think? Like a week? Two?
For 9 successive mornings, Catherine wondered over the repetition of a disappointment, which each morning became more severe. So it's been 9 days.
Which, considering Isabella had told her she would write her every day, to go 9 days without a letter feels unfair.
Yeah. And I also do kind of wonder if there's a piece of why Catherine's brain gets to do more wandering here is because she is kind of trying to avoid reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a big reality bomb coming for her with this letter from her brother.
Yes, as we find out, which I think is no surprise to any of us, but a major surprise to Catherine, James and Isabella have ended their engagement, and Isabella is now engaged to Captain Tilney.
And like, we're getting this from James's perspective. The details of it aren't exactly clear, other than he was asking Isabella, do I need to be worried? Do I need to be worried? Do I need to be worried? And she's like, no, we're just friends. Yeah, it's who broke what off, right? Did she come and say, I'm engaged to Tilney now, bye? Did something happen where they got caught? Was James just like, okay, like we're done? It's not quite clear how the breakup happened, other than James is very angry and sad.
Although he still seems to like Thorpe. And I'm like, I don't know how you like that dude.
Well, because again, they pedestal their friends.
Yeah.
And when they do that and they crumble, like, he's not quite ready to give up Thorpe's pedestal to recognize that he is like his sister. And I don't even know if in this he even fully understands Isabella's character.
Yeah.
But he's just so angry in this moment.
And sad.
They're not great critical thinkers. The Morlands are not.
Yeah, reality looks a little different for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do like this advice he gives her at the end. Dearest Catherine, beware how you give your heart. I think it's both sweet and maybe him projecting a little bit of like, don't get hurt like I got hurt. But it is also like a nice brotherly, he wants to make sure that she's thoughtful about who she's going to become engaged to.
Catherine's also in the house of the family of the man that his fiance cheated on him with.
Right, like how does he know that Henry is any different from Captain Tilney?
Right. I do appreciate in his letter that he doesn't blame Captain Tilney. He puts the blame on Isabella, who should have been better. She's the one who made the promise.
Right. Yeah, he would have been fine without it.
She's the one who broke a promise. Tilney was temptation. He wasn't actively pursuing someone who didn't want to be chased.
Yeah, as we know, we don't like Isabella.
No. I like that Henry watched Catherine read the letter and basically just watched her face go from like, happy, I have a letter, to, oh, what? Oh, I just get more and more sad.
Yep.
And he can't do anything because Dad walks in and they go and sit and have breakfast, and she just sits there and cries through breakfast.
And the general notices nothing.
Yeah, this is how you know he is a great guy.
Very self-centered.
Catherine's feelings about him are valid. The story wasn't, but he is an asshat. And this is like a solidifying moment of your house guest is literally crying at the dinner table and you
don't care.
Don't care, don't notice, whatever it is. But Eleanor and Henry are sitting there watching her through breakfast, just like crying into her eggs. They're like, what the fuck was in that letter?
This has to be something really bad.
And again, like, oh, I love these chapters so much because they're so sweet. Because she runs up to her room after breakfast and then the maid is there, so she can't stay there because she's just trying to find a quiet place to cry. And then she comes back down and her friends are in the little quiet space in the breakfast room and they give her space. They don't push her.
Yeah, they do ask, like, did someone die or is everyone okay?
Yeah. Like, first she comes down to the drawing room. That's what it was. She comes down to the drawing room and they're there and they retreat. They literally leave to give her space. And I just love these two. They're like secure reactions to everything of just, Catherine will come and tell us. Catherine will come to us when she needs it. They're not overstepping those boundaries. And again, it's one of the boundaries that we don't think a lot about of you shouldn't be giving help unless it has been consented to.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you can't ask if someone wants help, but they're not forcing help onto Catherine until she's ready for it. And they trust her to come and ask for their guidance or comfort if she needs it.
Yep. And she does.
Yeah. And I think that first sort of like, I hope nothing bad has happened. Is everyone in your family okay? They're like opening that door for her to tell them without, again, without pushing.
Yeah, without pushing, without pressure. Just like genuine
concern. Well, then I like, it's not like, what was in your letter? How bad is everything? It's like, no bad news from home. And they're opening that door, but it's not like you have to tell us what was in that letter.
Right.
It's just such a soft sort of, we're going to go through the basics of like, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. And then if you don't want to tell us, you don't have to tell us.
Well, and Henry's also like, if I had known, I definitely wouldn't have done a silly dance with the letter when we got it. He was like, if I had known it was bad news, I would have taken it a little more seriously, making sure you got it.
So these two tiny paragraphs here are so vivid in my head. Nothing further was said for a few minutes. And then speaking through her tears, she added, I do not think I shall ever wish for a letter again. And then we move on to Henry and he's, I am so sorry, said Henry. And he just closes his book that he had just opened. And again, that action there, he had picked up a book again, to remove some of the pressure from her to have to talk about it. And that little tiny line there speaks so much to me. Like he was waiting for an opening to give her some support, but he was also through his actions showing her there was no pressure. And it's so vivid to me in my head of them just like sitting around and he's just like opened a book and just casually. And then as soon as she's like, ah, he's like, I'm so sorry. Gives her his full attention. I just love it.
Very secure attachment, very low pressure.
And even in his response, if I had suspected the letter of containing anything unwelcome, I should have given it with very different feelings. Again, he's not pressuring her to be like, what was in the letter? He's literally just saying, I wish I'd known that it was bad news so I could have given you comfort from the start.
I love it. It was so good.
When we talk about why Tilney's the best, or at least when I talk about why Tilney's the best, people often think it's because he's teasing or it's because he is interested in like things that he can talk to like Mrs. Allen about muslins. Like he is personable. This is why I love Tilney. This chapter in particular where she comes down and he's just nice. And this little piece here where she's upset and there's just so much secure non-pressure and just, I'm going to show you that I care about you by just being here.
Mm-hmm. He has good caretaking energy. He's not overbearing. He's not trying to control her, but rather like, I'm here to offer you support as you need it.
Right. It's so gentle and subtle. He doesn't need to be big and grandiose and all of those things. He's just there. And that's, it's so romantic. Just being there and not pressuring anyone. Perfect.
And then I kind of read this as like, Catherine wants to tell them, but doesn't know how to tell them. So she's like, I just need you to do me one thing. Like, if your brother's coming, let me know so I can leave.
And they're both like, what?
This seems weird. I mean, we also don't want to spend time with him, but this seems weird for you, Catherine. And Henry kind of gets it. I mean, he had watched things in Bath. He had seen things unraveling. He'd seen things unfold. And so he like kind of like, oh, Miss Thorpe.
Yes. And they had talked about it before he left. So he already knew Catherine was a little bit anxious about this. I don't think he would have predicted this. He deferred to Catherine's opinion about Isabella.
Yeah.
And that flirting isn't necessarily a bad thing as long as you are constant in and genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like kind of funny because that, again, is a very secure reaction to things.
Yep.
Of just, yeah, flirting is just flirting. Like, it's okay. You're allowed to continue to have your friendships with the opposite sex.
Right. As long as you know where the boundaries are.
Well, he's not a jealous person.
I think Tilney demonstrates such a secure attachment in all of these actions. I'd classify Catherine a little bit more as anxious,
yes,
in her attachment. And we kind of see it here. Like, she's being coaxed towards a more secure attachment, but we see it here where she's like, you just need to read James's letter yourself. And then she's like, oh, wait, but there's that one thing. She's thinking about that last line of be careful who you give your heart to. And then she's like, you know what? Just read it. Like, it's fine. It's brotherly advice. Like, it's fine.
Well, and I mean, when we're talking about anxious attachment, it goes back to the start where she's like, romance is over. He hates me. Mm-hmm. And that sort of immediate reaction. And I think that's also part of why I love this chapter so much. It's because Catherine's anxious attachment is so soothed by these two individuals with such secure attachment, which is what a good partnership should do. A good partnership should bring out your security. It should help shift those anxious parts of you into greater security and greater trust. And isn't it so sweet that this is Catherine's first romance and it's just so secure?
Right? Not everyone gets that.
She thought her boyfriend's dad was a murderer and he's like, nah, I love you. I think this is also the first time, like when she's like, don't read that, but he's just giving me good advice. Is the first real open declaration Catherine has made towards liking Tilney. Because Tilney's definitely dropped some pretty good hints of like, you think the best of people, and that makes me think that you're the best person here. And he has done some definite flirting to be like, I like you. And Catherine likes being liked, as does Henry. We have that line where like Catherine liking him made her more likable. But there's also that moment where I'm like, okay, now your feelings are not hidden at all. He knows. There's reassurance for him as well in this chapter. And I'm like, I like that.
Me too. And then even Eleanor reads it and starts being like, who is this Miss Thorpe character? What's her family like? And it comes very quickly to like, are they a wealthy family? I'd be interested by this. And even Catherine brings up like, yeah, it was a little weird when, like, my dad made a very generous offer, and she was really upset by it. Huh. Maybe there's some thoughts here on money and the choosing of a partner, which, in some ways, like, I get in this day and age, because that was significant, and even nowadays, but she had a really good offer in front of her.
And both Eleanor and Henry are like, well, I don't think it's really that possible that Frederick could be engaged to Isabella. This feels weird.
This is out of character for our brother. He intends to never marry. That's essentially what they say.
Yeah, like he kind of liked his heart being untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
That he had these lofty standards if he was ever going to fall for a woman.
And of like all the women, Miss Thorpe.
Did you catch the bit at the end? Prepare for your sister-in-law, Eleanor, and such a sister-in-law as you must delight in. Open, candid, artless, guileless, with affection strong but simple, forming no pretensions and knowing no disguise. Such a sister-in-law, Henry, I should delight in. You know who they're talking about.
Talking about Catherine. No way they're talking about Miss Thorpe.
Catherine, on the other hand, picks up none of that context.
Yeah, and she's like, well, maybe if she was bad with my family, she'll be better with yours. You know, she really likes your brother.
And I love how Henry just instantly is like, oh, she will be very constant unless a baronet comes along. She'll be constant unless she gets a better deal. They figure her out pretty quickly.
I mean, she's not hard to figure out. She is the villain.
Yeah, but Catherine still hasn't quite figured it out.
True.
I do appreciate the end of this chapter where they're basically just soothing Catherine by letting her talk about things.
They're letting her vent a little bit.
And I think there's also like this piece in here where the general has basically said that he wants his kids to be happy to Catherine. And both of his kids are like, no, if she's poor, our dad's not going to let this happen.
Our dad also thinks of status importantly.
Right. And it's not necessarily a soothing conversation, but Catherine feels relieved at the end of this.
Yeah. I think she feels less alone.
Yeah. And I think that that is just kind of sweet that as we move into chapter 26, it's almost like the three of them now have this secret intel to talk about and debate about, which I think fills a little bit of that part of Catherine that likes sensationalism. Yeah, the Tilneys kind of go back and forth about whether or not Frederick could possibly be engaged or not.
Yeah. And I mean, at least in the next chapter, he doesn't show up and doesn't tell anyone he's engaged.
Right.
So you would think if he was engaged and excited about it, he would have shown up at the house right away, as James had done, to go ask his dad, hey, dad, what can we do? I want to marry this woman.
Yeah, to get consent. And both the Tilneys are like, no, he's not going to.
Yeah. And he doesn't show up.
But they do get to go to Woodston.
Which is really exciting.
Right?
And it's really exciting because it's Catherine seeing her home, like her new home for the first time.
I mean, I don't know if Catherine's seeing it with that lens.
No, but we are. We know that's what it is.
I like that the general just like not so subtly like, okay, we're coming to see you. And Henry's like, that would be great. He's happy.
Mm-hmm. Which I can't imagine there are many times when his dad shows up at his house that he's that happy.
I don't know if his dad actually shows up at his house that often anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe only to like check up and criticize.
Mm-hmm. I also think it's really cute that Tilney's like, I need to leave early because my dad will want the house to be really nice, which I actually think is probably true, but he's also probably leaving early to be like, she's coming. I have to make this house look really nice so she'll want to live here.
There's a piece of it about impressing Catherine.
Exactly, which I think is very cute.
Yeah, I think it's also really cute that Catherine's like, you don't have to go early.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Just stay.
Please.
I'll miss you when you're gone.
Yeah, they're very cute. They're so soft. It's such a soft romance.
It's very soft, which we like.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the part of me that's kind of like, yeah, Tilney, you have a job.
Right? Like, you should also be at work.
I think it's interesting how much leisure time there actually is for someone in his position.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't planning on going back for Sunday, but now he is. And so now he'll have to give services.
What are they doing when you're not there?
I'm assuming there's like a deacon of some sort who fills in.
Probably.
So.
They go, yeah. And Catherine thinks it is marvelous and that there can be no faults.
Well, again, she's pedestaling. But in this instant, it feels cute. She has it in her head that this is going to be like Fullerton, but better. And again, it's kind of like Catherine is predisposed to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a circumstance where she is predisposed to be happy because she is probably going to go to somewhere that's better than Fullerton because they're rich people. She's not like that pedestal isn't going to fall easily because she's set up for success in this moment. It's not like she's going to go to Woodston and it's going to be a heap.
Exactly. She does make some like very grand generalizations of like, it's the most comfortable room in the world, the prettiest room in the world. But I mean, I also think that's really nice. Like, that's what you want to feel about your home. This is nice. This is either like lovely or cozy or like whatever words you want to ascribe to it. You want to feel good about it.
Yeah. I do appreciate that Henry is waiting outside with his dogs.
You know, me too. I wrote down puppies.
And I very much imagine there's like the scene that's not written in here because I don't know if the culture around pets has shifted, but that there's like this introduction on the doorstep with Catherine of like, oh, and this is my puppy Tom and this is my puppy Bella. And that he like goes in and introduces all of the puppies. And I imagine that little extra scene in between there, which just like sets, I mean, if you got introduced to a whole bunch of puppies and some dogs, wouldn't you be like, oh, this is the best house ever?
I'd be excited about it. He knows Catherine. He's done a good job. He's made his house unusually tidy on the occasion. So he's like, he's picked up. He's trying to impress her.
And I think it's funny that Catherine's just like in awe, but the general's like almost upset that she's not giving more and commenting on all of the things that are amazing about this place. And we know that Catherine thinks this place is like amazing and that she's just taking it in.
Right. She's a little awestruck.
But the general needs her to like say how much she loves it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that she's comparing it to Fullerton or Northanger. And it's just, again, it's irksome. Nothing that he's saying is bad, but it's so irksome that he's missing so much of what Catherine is feeling.
He's not my least favorite character in this book, but he's not my favorite for sure. But they have a lovely visit. You know, they see the entire house. They wander around the grounds. You know, they have dinner and it's delicious. And then they do this ride home. And I love this line of Catherine would have quitted Woodston with little anxiety to the how or the when she might return to it. Like, she knows she's going to go back there.
Yeah.
Which I love that. I think that's really cute.
It's a soft, gentle sort of love that is happening here. Because Catherine actually hasn't revealed to us like a revelation of like, oh, I'm in love with Henry. We just kind of know she is.
Right.
Like, it doesn't need that declaration, which I think kind of speaks to a lot of how Catherine presents feelings, is she's not very verbose about like when she likes something or when she loves something or when she hates something. Even she's very internal, and I like that Henry and Eleanor can very easily read her.
Yeah,
it's frustrating that the general can't, but I do think there are some silly but sweet moments in this where like Catherine's talking about like, oh, this room should be furnished, it's so pretty. And the general's like, did you hear that? Henry, this room must be furnished. Oh, it's such a cute cottage. Don't take that cottage down, did you hear? And I imagine him kind of like saying it with like a lot of attention to it. And I still think it's so funny that Catherine has not picked up what every Tilney is thinking. You two are getting together.
Yeah. This is the path to marriage.
And I appreciate that Catherine's thoughts about Henry and about Eleanor are from that place of like mutually beneficial friendship. It is from that place of there is no promise here.
If Tilney and Catherine never get together, they would still have a nice friendship with each other.
Right. And it's like there's just this low pressure, low stakes sort of romance going on that I just love so much. And when I talk about wanting to find a Henry Tilney, it is because I am probably a little bit of a Catherine with some anxious attachment. Mm. And I just want something soft and low pressure, where it is just like subtle, no pressure. Let's just support and respect each other.
It's an emotional intimacy.
Yeah. I just appreciate how gentle it is. And
yeah, they're very cute together.
Did you enjoy these chapters?
I liked these chapters a lot. I feel like I get why these are your favorite chapters. I haven't finished it, so I can't declare them my favorite chapters.
That's fair.
Right? But I think we're almost at the end of this book. So this is like, I feel like we're in a good place with things.
Right.
I guess maybe that moves us into predictions. And I feel like there's going to be something more about Isabella coming in here and like whether she is actually engaged or not, or I don't know. But I do feel like there's going to be something with that. And then Henry and Catherine are going to have to get together in these last chapters. Right. So I think that's going to happen pretty quickly here. I think we're going to have to on ramp into a marriage proposal relatively soon. And actually, if I'm linking the two, I think what will complicate things is if Isabella is actually engaged to Captain Tilney, I do think that that's going to be a little awkward because they are now sister-in-laws, but not in the way that they thought they would be.
Yeah, it would be this extra awkwardness that you'd carry around for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't you tell me your favorite quote?
So I already read it out, but I just love the way this is written. And I think it, for me, paints a really good emotional picture. And it's, Catherine had expected to have her feelings worked, and worked they were. Astonishment and doubt first seized them, and a shortly succeeding ray of common sense added some bitter emotions of shame. I can just like, I can feel that. The picture of that makes so much sense to me.
Well, and I think it's a very common experience when you do that reality check and you're like, ugh.
Right.
Why was my brain going in that direction?
Exactly.
And I appreciate that it's a dose for Catherine. It's not, and she doesn't set up camp and live there, which to me like says that Catherine might have fantastical thinking and she might be a highly emotional person, but she is decently good at regulating.
Yeah. And there's some reality testing that she can do.
Yeah. I don't know if Catherine has very much been in an environment where she's had to do a lot of that. I imagine she probably spent a lot of time imagining things in order to play and exist, because she lived in an isolated space with her brothers and sisters who are younger than her, that she often is like, they're stupid.
Yeah.
She probably spent a lot of time in her imagination. So she hasn't had to do a lot of testing, because I think she was able before to very much differentiate between reality and fantasy, because she knew she was doing it as an exercise in entertainment. And I think there's also, because Catherine doesn't start reading these gothic novels until this book, right? That she, there's like this little piece of, because it's in a book, it must be real. This must be based off some form of reality because it's in the written word. And this is the lesson of books are fake. And I think that speaks again, like when people might say that she's naive, I think it's just more that she's had a very limited experience.
Exactly.
Which, like, I guess it's part of being naive. I guess my favorite is, the formidable Henry soon followed her into the room, and the only difference in his behavior to her was rather paid her more attention than was usual. Catherine had never wanted more comfort, and he looked as if he was aware of it.
Mm-hmm. It's just like so soft and lovely, and can't all partners do that?
He's so responsive. And like, of course he's aware of it. You parted on the stairs and ran away crying.
He knows you're upset.
And I very much imagine that conversation previously as just him very gently being like, Catherine, what were you thinking?
Well, and he's learning that she's sensitive.
Yeah, she's sensitive and not in a way that is, she's not a Mrs. Bennet who is like sensitive and then wildly dysregulated. She's sensitive. I think he recognized, and I think it shows even further in when they give her space, that if you give her space, she can then come back and be comforted.
She just needs some time sometimes to feel her feelings.
Yeah. And I just like these chapters. I appreciate them so much from the perspective of the romance. Isn't it so good that Henry was the one who found her? Because I don't think Eleanor would have called her out, even though Henry's calling her out is very gentle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Eleanor would have.
No, I think it would have been a different response.
I think it would have been like, you're weird. And that probably would have been the most of it. Again, I don't think the general would have called her out either. So I think it's perfect that it is Henry and that he does gently call her out and then teaches her. We're allowed to be upset with each other, but that doesn't break the bond, the connection that we have. We're allowed to call each other out, call each other wrong. We're allowed to disagree on things. And we can still come back together because we have a solid foundation here, right?
Yeah.
You thinking that my dad is a murderer isn't enough to crack our foundation. It's okay. Which, like, I think speaks to the fact that Henry recognizes his dad gives off vibes. That Henry knows that his dad can injure someone with his temper and his judgment.
Yeah, like, his dad can be a jerk.
And yeah, that Catherine thinking that isn't enough to shatter their friendship, their bond, how much he likes her, because he doesn't like his dad that much either.
And it's good that he lives kind of far away. Like, they can do a day trip to Woodson, but they're not going to show up every day.
Yeah. I'm excited for you to finish. We are going to read 27, 28, 29 next, and we're going to have those last two chapters for our final episode so we can also talk a little bit more about Northanger overall. And if you want, we can like talk about your preference in terms of the two books that we've read so far. And maybe you're going to be someone who likes Pride and Prejudice better, which is like totally okay. But I will tell you why I think you're wrong.
Okay, good.
But we're going to do it that way. So you're going to read 27, 28, 29, and we're going to come back and talk about those. And I'm just like, the climax hasn't come yet.
Okay, that's good to know.
So I'm excited for you to get there. I wasn't sure because while I was going through and reading these, I wondered if you were going to be like really freaking out about what happened in these chapters.
Nah.
I am excited to see what the next few chapters bring.
Okay, me too. I think it'll be good. Thank you everyone for listening and for following along with us on social media. You can find us on Instagram at Austin Therapy Podcast and Kate's meme account, which is at Austin Therapy. Yeah, we're enjoying doing this. I guess this will be, after these next two episodes, will be the conclusion of season two, which is pretty exciting. I think we will try and jump back into season 1.5, where we're watching the mini series of Pride and Prejudice, but stay tuned for that probably after season two is out.
Yeah. And then we have to decide what we're going to read next.
Yeah. So if you have recommendations, let us know. Maybe we'll put a poll up and whichever one gets the most votes.
Yeah. And see what people want us to read next. The one that I haven't read in a long time is Sense and Sensibility. And I say a long time, like 3 years. Yeah, I'm kind of excited to keep going because now that we're done, like my favorites, I'm still just really excited to keep talking and talking. We probably won't do Mansfield Park next because I think, I don't know, Mansfield Park will be more heavy.
Mm. Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll see how life is going for both of us too.
Right.
But anyway, we'll put some suggestions maybe up for people to vote on.
Yeah. I'm just excited. Yeah, I made you read more Jane Austen.
It's true. At the start of this, no Jane Austen. Now, two books.
I'm winning. Well, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.